So today's FAQ session is, would there be laws in socialism? Now, I recently got asked about this in an interview I did, and I said, oh, well, we wouldn't have laws as such because, well, laws are rules set by a coercive state. But we would have what you would call agreements or codes to live by. But then, of course, my interviewer asked me how these agreements, so-called agreements, would be monitored and enforced. And I was a bit stuck because, after all, there's no point having agreements if you don't have a way to make sure they're adhered to, which means enforcing them in some sense. And as soon as you talk about that, well, you're really talking about laws under another name, which was the point my astute interviewer then went on to make, somewhat to my discomfort. Now, we had a previous FAQ session on democracy, and here is another area of future socialist society that people are very likely to ask about, and yet we spend very little time and effort exploring the question. And instead, we usually rely on that term, that old standby, that it's not for us to create the cookshops of the future. But this shouldn't preclude us from having a working hypothesis. Now, a lot of you remember that around about 30 years ago, Peter Lawrence raised quite a ruckus in the party by saying that it was completely unrealistic and, in fact, utopian to expect the abolition on day one of all laws, courts, police, and even prisons, and that the working class would laugh at us for even suggesting the idea. It was just no good saying that there wouldn't be any crime in socialism, because what if we were wrong? What if, against all expectations, there were murders or rapes, or at least in the early days, and then we'd abolish the one organisation, the police, that's trained to deal with such situations? That seemed quite preposterous and quite, in fact, irresponsible. What emerged from that row was, I think, a more nuanced view, a pragmatic view. It seemed sensible to argue for retaining some elements of, well, I don't know what you'd call it, the justice system, in proportion to the need for it, and for as long as that need remained. So the occupation of, say, police officer, rather than being abolished overnight, might be allowed to decline organically in socialism as the need for it also declined. But this still leaves the question of laws. It's easy to see how we could democratically decide these laws, or these codes, or whatever you call them. But would it need to be as formal as that? After all, if you think about early societies, hunter-gatherers, lots of them, well, they never had written laws. They never had tables of laws. But presumably they had a pretty clear idea of what was acceptable and what wasn't. Most of capitalism's laws would be redundant in any case. Is it necessary, in fact, for socialism to have laws or agreements or codes or whatever against things that are obviously antisocial acts? Or can they simply be taken as read by collective common sense? And then what happens if people do commit antisocial acts? How do we persuade workers today that socialism tomorrow will be good at preventing this kind of behaviour when today this sort of thing is all too common? So there we are. There's some questions to chew over for today's fact session. Anybody like to start?
I'm not sure what's the matter with laws by any other name. I don't think there's anything wrong with having what capitalism calls laws in socialism, as long as they serve a sensible purpose, which I think they would. I mean, you know, we've always said that socialism won't be a utopia. You know, people will do things they shouldn't do occasionally and so on. And socialism will have ways of dealing with that. And, you know, one of the ways we could have to of dealing with that is, call them what you like, rules, guidance, laws. Don't think it really matters. So I suppose I basically think Peter Lawrence was right all those years ago. I'll just say something more, since nobody else seems to want to speak. In certain jurisdictions, they operate this thing called, I've forgotten the name of it now, I'm sure other people know, something justice. It's a system whereby, sorry? Hey, someone say something?
I did.
What do you say?
Retribution.
No. The idea is that if somebody commits a crime, rather than sort of immediately punish them and so on, and regard it as an offence against the victim, the person who's
got
restorative justice. Somebody just reminded me restorative justice. The two parties get together and try and sort of work it out if they can. And that doesn't mean to say that the person who's committed the offence will not be punished in any way. I think they practice it quite a lot in New Zealand, so I've heard. But it sort of gives hope for the future, as it were. The person who's committed that crime, knowing what the victim has suffered, will be less inclined to do it again in the future. And I suspect something like that would exist in socialism. Can't be sure, obviously. But that doesn't mean to say that there wouldn't have to be rules that people abide by. And that if they didn't abide by them, there wasn't some kind of scheme to try and settle the matter and to try and make sure that there wasn't a repetition of the conduct in question.
This is a issue that preoccupies me quite a lot, and I think that. Before we even start thinking about whether there would be laws and what we mean by that and what they would be and who would enforce them, I think we need to go back one step and think about how will society behave toward, what attitude will society take to people who engage in antisocial behavior? So, I mean, one thing that often comes up is that you often find people talking about socialism being a just society. Well, that's really a kind of funny one for me, because if you look at sort of the anthropological record, you'll actually find that justice is an obsession of property societies. You just don't find it as a concern outside property societies, and particularly in capitalism. What you find is an attitude that is more focused on re-establishing social harmony when there has been a disturbance. And the idea of justice doesn't literally come into it. It's not about sort of people getting their justice out. You ask these people what they say, you explain what justice is, and they generally laugh, and they will say, look, what you're trying to do is you're trying to put something right once it's already gone wrong, and you just can't do that. It's not actually something that is meaningful. So these societies tend to focus much more on the idea of restoring harmony. And they go about that in various ways. Now, the big issue for me is how will you can't really answer this question, as I understand it, until you have some conception of how socialist society will be organized in terms of localism versus centralism. If it became localized, if socialist society became localized so that you had local communities working together, then it becomes much, much easier, because the way in which traditional societies deal with this, very much on a face-to-face basis, of communities of people who know one another, or at least have, you know, are aware of one another as individuals. And when that happens, it becomes very simple. And I'll just give you one example. Among certain sub-Saharan hunter-gatherer groups, and we're talking about very large groups here, we're talking about nearly a million people here, but they're organized into bands or communities. And if somebody starts behaving in an antisocial way, for example, if somebody starts claiming special status, and this is something that often happens among young men, then the way they deal with it, there's one particular group that I've kind of looked at. They have something called the Mwajo. And the Mwajo is conducted by elderly, usually elderly women, mostly without husbands. And what they will do is that if somebody's behaving in an antisocial way, they will come into the middle of the community and they will start performing. And they apparently get very good at this. And they will start performing the antisocial behavior and making it as funny as they possibly can. Now, nobody is actually being fingered on this, but the person whose behavior they are performing will very soon cotton on to this. And what generally happens is that they just can't cope and they go running off into the forest or wherever. But that doesn't do them any good, because as soon as they come back, the women will start up all over again. Everyone will be laughing. Nobody will be pointing the finger. And the women will continue until that person actually laughs. And when that person laughs, they stop. And it's a remarkably effective method. And there's been a lot of work on this, because what we discover is that being highly social creatures that we are, being cooperative creatures, social approval and disapproval is incredibly powerful factor in our lives. In fact, what's actually found is that when somebody is experiencing significant social disapproval, what goes on in their brain neurologically is that the pain circuits are stimulated, exactly the same circuits that are stimulated as with physical pain. So we know that sort of social approval and disapproval works, but it only works on a face-to-face basis. You know, if you had a very much more impersonal society, an indoor society, then it would be harder to manage. And therefore you start thinking about having, agencies, is that the right word, of some kind, who would actually be necessary for enforcing laws. But all that aside, what occurs to me is that you can't even start thinking about whether we would have laws or not until you have some idea about what the attitudes of society, the purposes of the society were. Is it some kind of justice or restorative justice, or simply trying to reharmonize the community? What's the purpose of, you know, sort of behind all this? And when you've got that, what's the structure of society you're going to have, and how would you then build upon that? And just to finish off, I think that a socialist society would be so alien to us that it's actually very difficult to start even thinking about it. And when something seems obvious to us, you're pretty much sure to be you're mentally then in a state of reification. You're probably projecting cultural assumptions so deep that you've never kind of investigated them. So I agree we need to think about this, but it's very difficult to know how much to tell people, because given my conception of what a socialist society might look like, I don't bring it up because, you know, if I'm discussing socialism with people, it will immediately start bringing up their come off it kind of attitudes, because, you know, it's so much against our cultural norms. But anyway, just a few ideas to throw in.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting what you're saying, Richard. I completely agree. One thing you can't do is sort of project modern society onto a future social society. That's not going to work. But I mean, one of the things we get asked by people, not that often, but occasionally, is, you know, what we would do about serious crimes. I mean, I completely take your point about small antisocial behaviour in a small group, and the response of that particular group you were talking about, the sub-Saharan group, seems a very clever one. But of course, it only really works for sort of behavior that can be laughed at. But when you're talking about quite serious behavior like murder and rape, hard to see how you could deal with that kind of behavior in the same way. People tend to ask, what are we going to do about the, they'll go along with us to a certain extent when we say, well, a lot of crimes will disappear. People won't have the same motivations to commit crimes. Even crimes against other people will tend to decline because of the lack of motivation. But, people still think that there'll be a hard core of, they usually seize on paedophiles and, psychopaths as if there is this sort of group of genetically programmed hardcore criminals. So, those are things that we also have to answer.
I'll be brief because I've talked a lot, but in traditional societies, those are dealt with in a very straightforward way. What normally happens is that in traditional societies, individuals are autonomous. If they have a dispute dispute even up to somebody's murdered somebody else, it's left down to the individuals. Nobody else intervenes because that's simply acting on behalf of someone else, and you just don't do that. Everyone's autonomous. And it's actually, there are a whole series of ways in which individuals are allowed to sort out their problems. And there is an escalating kind of way of going about it. And the first thing you do is that you hug each other. And that's not a sort of moral thing. It's actually when you hug each other, you find out how much tension somebody is carrying in your muscles. And you can get a sense of how serious somebody is actually being about something. So you can sort of judge. And if you're not really that too sort of serious about it, but somebody else obviously is, then you can back off and all that sort of thing. But in terms of serious crime, again, that's left up to individuals. And if somebody is really, 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 and first thing is they can be expelled from the community, but all that sort of thing. If somebody is really, 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 behaving in a very antisocial way, couple of people take him out into the forest and they have spears with poison tips and there's chuck in the butt and that's the end of it. That's one way of dealing with it. We may not want that in a socialist society, but, if you're not going to have that, you're going to have some kind of agency, and that's the issue.
Yes, and of course, then you're going to have people who are willing to volunteer to staff those agencies. So you could imagine a situation where, all right, we don't want to take certain serious criminals out into the forest and stab them, but we would have to find something, some way to render them unable to harm other people, which does imply some kind of secure facility. But which I hesitate to call a prison. But then you'd have to have people to staff that prison, and if you couldn't find volunteers to do that job, then you're stuck with a rather unattractive set of options.
I think you would find people to do that job in the same way as you'd find people to do other sort of less desirable tasks, ones which are socially necessary. And, if people agreed to do that job, they wouldn't necessarily have to do it for the rest of their lives. It could well be a short-term thing, which, is operated on some kind of rota basis. And, same applies to the other so-called dirty jobs that, people often sort of throw at us. I'm all for prisons, in socialism. Benign ones.
Paddy, you mentioned that an earlier FAQ session had been on democracy. And in a way, I think today's topic and that topic join up. Here's why I think that. It's a precondition for getting into a socialist society that people should take control of their own conditions of existence to a much greater extent than they do at the moment. I mean, you know, a cross on a ballot paper every 5 years is way below the minimum acceptable engagement with the society that you live in. The way I see it, there would have to be a growth in democratic participation in the party, in any wider socialist movement. I mean, I don't assume that the only movement for socialism is always going to be this party. And if that happens, I think one consequence is that people can much more strongly own the conventions, rules, laws, whatever you like to call them, that are created in that much more democratic way with active participation on the part of most people. That, I think, makes a stronger incentive not to behave in an antisocial way. And I think it also gives legitimacy to anyone who would take on the jobs that Howard's mentioned. They would have a legitimate reason for doing that. So, and you know, you could have quite complex structures, geographical and otherwise, that carried democratic practice of that way.
Well, when you talk about complex structures, are you talking about some kind of enforcement agency? Are we talking about a more centralized society at the kind of macro level? I mean, I think this goes back to Richard's question about what kind of society are we talking about in the first place? Are we talking about a quite localized, almost atomized society where each group kind of does their own thing? Or are we talking about, and given we're talking about a global society with global communications, I imagine global travel by a fair number of people, so possibly quite a dynamic global society, the idea of it being each little group does their own thing seems a little bit unlikely. So I would sort of tend towards the idea of there being sort of global codes and therefore a kind of collective way of dealing with these things rather than the sort of hunter-gatherer approach that Richard was talking about. So, yeah, so Keith, these kind of complex structures, what have you got in mind for that?
Well, I certainly haven't got in mind completely separate small units of people. Of course, in much more substantial ways, a socialist society would have to be a global society. I don't see what the kind of point at which I think we can invoke the standard response, which is that it's for the people at the time to work all this out. But I mean, we can give pointers and say that there can be different levels of decision making where resolutions to organize society in a particular way are passed on to further bodies and debated. And there is, you know, there's a complex structure there. We have an instance in the party's own structure. I mean, God forbid that socialist society would be one perpetual EC meeting. But, you know, there are possible relations there between different groups of people who, with goodwill, can collaborate and decide what they want the surrounding world to look like.
I suspect a perpetual EC meeting is probably some member's idea of heaven. But I was also thinking about, I wonder if we could, maybe an approach would be to have the way that we talked about in another meeting about disaster relief. We were talking about a kind of mobile, specially trained mobile force that went into areas to deal with disasters. You could possibly have a similar kind of setup to go and deal with crime situations where, you know, something had happened, nobody knew who'd done it, let's say. It's kind of like a socially detective novel, it's practically writing itself, isn't it? You can just imagine the sort of equivalent of Hercule Poirot and Miss Marple flying in specially to interview the locals, something like that.
I'm glad you've given them as examples, because the thought that, that was going through my mind was quite different. It sounded as if the SPGB was just going to become the SPG.
I mean, I think you have to look at optimism at the moment, you know, look at what goes on in prisons. And I mean, in America, you've got 50% more chance of dying if you're in a prison than you have if you're not in a prison, due to the violence from inmates and staff and other things, you know, like suicides and stuff like that. And a lot of the crime is drug-related, right, you know, and property crime. So a lot of crime wouldn't take place in socialism. But you still have, you know, rape and murder and things like that, pedophiles and stuff. So there'll still be some things going on to a small scale, right? So you need people to be able to police that and deal with it, right? You know, I mean, if you call them policemen or I don't know what you call them who find out what happened and who was responsible, right? You know, but if you look at capitalism, I mean, there's a lot of wasted lives because of prisons, right? You know.
I think it's probably also worth pointing out in passing that capitalism has got all these laws against murder and rape and domestic abuse and, you know, child abuse and stuff like that. They don't do anything. They don't stop any of it. The main reason why more people don't murder and rape and, you know, commit all these other horrible things is people don't want to. People's own sense of right and wrong is what deters them. And they simply had no desire to do these things. So arguably, if you took all these laws away, it wouldn't make any... I mean, you certainly wouldn't see a sort of spike in these things.
Not only would you not see a spike, you'd see far fewer. I mean, Dougie said that in socialism we'd still have rape, murder and paedophiles. I mean, sounds terrible, actually. I mean, a lot of murders are committed for property reasons in one form or the other. So, you know, that would sort of go. Apes are committed. Why not? Again, you know, it's often to do with people's frame of mind and the kind of, you know, the way they've been brought up and sort of, you know, the society in general. So I'm certain a lot of that would go. Paedophiles, well, can't claim to know much about that, but you know, nevertheless, you know, I think it's a bit excessive maybe to say we still have all these, you know, this sort of this degree of sort of major things like rape, murder and paedophiles in a socialist society. You know, hopefully we wouldn't.
I mean, I think you'd have less of it, really, you know, because most people would be more responsible, really, you know, but you might still have the odd person. I mean, you've got people who can become mentally ill, you know, and I mean, I've experienced schizophrenia, right, and it's quite frightening for the person, but it's also scary for the people around you because you can be violent, really. You might think you're being threatened or somebody's going to shoot you, you know, and you might actually believe that and then react to it. So, I mean, there will be situations where violence is taking place, and it might be due to mental health. It might not be, really. It might be jealousy or other emotions. I think there'll still be a small amount of those things going on. I'm not so sure about paedophile. I don't know much about them, really, you know. But, I mean, I think murder and rape and things, there'd be less of it, but there might still be some, really, you know.
Hey, I get that. Yeah, I'm sure you're right there. Yeah.
I mean, if we're talking about sort of having some kind of agency to deal with, I mean, I think that's right. I think there will be a percentage. I know that there is quite a lot of crimes of passion occur in hunter-gatherer communities. I mean, that's probably the biggest issue. You know, sort of men squabbling over women. I mean, it has to be said. But it's, if you're going to have an agency, you're not actually just going to have an enforcement agency. You're going to have a, investigative agency. You know, if the murder's going on, you've got to find out who is actually committing it. So you've got to have some kind of, agency to go out and research this. So you've got to have people who are willing to sort of cooperate and that kind of thing. And then you start to get into quite difficult waters there. I just say one thing about paedophilia. Can we talk about child abuse? Because only 10% of paedophiles actually commit child abuse, and 90% of child abuse is not committed by paedophiles. It's committed for all sorts of other reasons. Even reasons that are less likely to obtain in a social society. I think the quantity of antisocial behavior will be much, much, much less. But there is still this question about how would we protect society from it. And that's the bottom line, I think.
I thought that Dougie brought up an interesting thing in equating or bringing together the violence and mental illness thing. And I wonder if in a socialist society that such antisocial, what we call a crimes, would be regarded more as a mental illness or some sort of thing that needed to be treated and therefore would fall into the same category as other illnesses. I mean, some of which do require people to be kept away from other people, after all.
Yeah, I mean, it's often said that a large number of the people in prisons are one way or the other mentally ill.
I need to be a little bit careful if you're talking to somebody with that, because I don't know, in the past, I don't know if it's still true. You actually mentioned that, and people say, oh, yeah, gulags. You know, so it's like that's easy to be turned against us. So you have to be careful how you put that one to people.
I thought that gulags were more like turning prisons into, they weren't really turning prisons into mental hospitals, were they? I mean, I think you could avoid that.
Yeah, I agree. But the idea that, you know, sort of if somebody is behaving in a way that that is antisocial or against the state, if we're talking about the Soviet Union, then they're just labelled as psychiatric cases. So people still have that in the back of their minds, you know, or certain people of a certain age anyway. And so if you just sort of say that, oh, well, it will just be treated as a mental illness, I've had it time and again thrown back at me, oh, yeah, well, that's an authoritarian society. So just an observation.
Yes, I take your point.
I'll say something about mental illness. Most people who are mentally ill aren't violent. There's probably more violence from people who aren't mentally ill. But I was just making the point that schizophrenia and the experience of it can lead to violence, but it doesn't in most cases. Most people with mental health problems aren't violent, although they might have a reason to be violent from their condition or whatever. But, I mean, yeah, it's true that a lot of people with mental health problems end up in prison, really, you know.
Joy's just said that she thinks that she's with me here at the moment. She just said that what she thinks is that what most people want is compassionate therapy. People with problems that might lead them to commit antisocial acts. And it is true, isn't it, that socialism would be a much more compassionate society. I don't think anybody would want to deny that. And I'm reminded of, I don't know, a small example, don't know how relevant it is, of many years ago when my son confided he was being bullied at school, and the nature of the bullying was that he was being picked on when he came out of school by somebody who in the past sort of seemed to have been one of his friends. I said, right, I said, I'm going to speak with him. And I said, no, don't. And my son said, no, don't do it. But I did anyway. And I intercepted this boy as he was coming out of school. I asked him what had been happening. And he said, oh, I'm doing that because he's calling me names and done various things to me. And I didn't sort of threaten him and say, look, you know, I'll kick your head in if this carries on. I mean, I simply said, well, look, OK, I understand what you're saying. But look, shall we make a bargain? I'll make sure he doesn't say any of these things to you if you leave him alone when he comes out of school. Said, shall we shake on it? He said, yes. And that was the end of it. Yeah. Now, maybe I was lucky, I don't know, but that, you know, on that occasion, it seemed to work.
Yeah, I just come in here. I was going back to what Richard was saying. I would have thought in a compassionate society, the well-ordered and compassionate society, minor problems will be dealt with the community level, could be dealt with there quite satisfactorily. I agree with Howard that I think there is a place for call them prisons for want of a better description. I served many years in the prison service in different capacities, and there is no reason why a prison, if you like, call it a detention order, cannot be a useful and constructive and rehabilitative process. It, you know, in this society, in the capitalist society, that costs money. And I go back to, I was serving when Thatcher decided she was going to take on the prison service after she'd smashed the miners. She wanted to destroy the power of the Prison Officers Association. And, you know, once she'd done that, I mean, the process of taking all of the good stuff was going on in prisons in terms of education, retraining. Many of you people, not you people, everybody, who had a, you know, in 30, 40 years ago, had a tradesman, a bricklayer or a carpenter or, I don't know, a house painter and decorator, electricians. That person would have, because there were no apprenticeships, they'd gone. And these people were trained in the prison system under the Construction Industry Training Board system. You know, it can be a constructive and useful environment. You can have counselling going on. You can have medical and psychiatric care going on. You know, I've been in courts when judges have been in despair because they know that the person standing in the dock needs psychiatric care, but they've been closed down. The places that could have helped them are gone. You know, they go back to this rather stupid thing of care in the community, and they're not funding it. Judges were very often left with no option but to send somebody to a prison because they knew that at least there was a chance of them getting some treatment. Not the best treatment, but some treatment. So, you know, in a compassionate and well-ordered and caring society, there is no reason why the people who, you know, which society in general deems needs to, I hesitate to use the word retraining, well, they need help to get themselves back on a socially acceptable track, that prisons can't play an important part in that. You wouldn't need to, you know, to lock up so many people. You wouldn't need the brutal, deadly, mind-numbing regimes that exist around the world. They would actually be useful places. So I'll leave you with that thought.
One thing that's worth thinking about is that as capitalism sort of morphs slowly towards socialism, I mean, it would do you'd see changes in social attitudes, and as more and more people became socialist, so you would. That would be bound to have an effect on the way that capitalism looked. One thing that you might see, or you might look for, is that could inform this debate is a reduction in the types of in violent crimes, perhaps in domestic abuse, things like that. We could look for that and establish that as a metric for working out how serious a problem socialism would in fact have to deal with. So this is why, although as I said at the start, I think it's always a good idea to have a working hypothesis of an answer. That answer would change, and we would monitor how capitalist society itself was developing, and update our hypothesis in line with that. For example, Steven Pinker argues that murder has been in decline all through recorded history due to the influence of civilization, as he calls it. It may be that we see a decline in some forms of violent crime as we head closer to socialism. So that's something that to be borne in mind. We can have this working hypothesis, but we can modify it by watching the society around us and how it behaves.
Interesting idea, Paddy.
Can anyone think of any new forms of antisocial behaviour which don't exist now, but which might do in socialism? I'm thinking of the kind of thing that Richard was talking about, the individual who fancies themselves as a bit of a local celebrity, but other sorts of behaviour. Anybody think of any?
Sorry, excuse me, I'm eating. One thing that is often I've often wondered about in the socialist society, the very fact that there is no property means that it's not possible for significant hierarchies to develop. Because in order to have a hierarchy, as my understanding goes, and I'm correct me if anybody thinks differently, but in order to have a hierarchy, you need a means by which some people can stand between other people and their ability to satisfy their needs. So since that won't actually be the case in a socialist society, then it's very unlikely that we would get hierarchies developing on a big scale. But I'm wondering whether people could kind of present themselves as like charismatic figures and gather other followers to them, and they might collectively start to behave in antisocial ways or ways in which they set themselves apart from the rest of society in some kind of antagonistic way. So that's a possibility, I think. I mean, it might be only in a small way. I think that's the real thing about socialism, is that conflict will necessarily be small scale because you don't have the possibility of all these hierarchies. But you might get it on a small scale, and I think that might be an issue. And I also think that socialism might have problems that capitalism doesn't have, at least in terms of ways of dealing with people who behave in antisocial ways. I mean, you know, in capitalism, we've got all this thing like, you know, you can put someone on parole or something like that. Well, in a society where it's unlikely that everyone's going to have to carry identity cards, where there's going to be able to people to enforce that, and where there's going to be worldwide travel, you know, somebody can just disappear. I mean, literally just disappear. I mean, how are you going to keep track of people? So if you're going to deal with kind of more serious crimes, I think some kind of facility, prison, call it what you like, is the only way I can think of. I did think about tagging people as well. There might be a way of tagging people or identifying people, but that would be to stigmatize them, you know. And the other thing is, it's like if people commit crimes of passion, you know, I mean, how likely are they to reoffend? What do you do with that? I don't know what you do with that. I don't know how you view it or how you treat it. Anyway, just some thoughts.
Okay, well, one behaviour that at the moment doesn't occasion any comment, really, for the most part, that I thought might be considered a serious ethical breach in socialism would be wastefulness. I don't know what people think about that. I'm not saying it would be a crime or anything like that, but that would be arguably a new form of antisocial behaviour. Another one would be proprietarian behaviour. The sort of the idea that, well, maybe this would be a thing that small kids were taught about, that it's not okay to say something's mine, you can't have it, sort of thing. And if an adult did it, it would be, well, probably regarded as some kind of possibly going back to what Am was saying, some sort of sign of mental disorder. I don't know. anyone think of any others?
There might be a different concept of antisocial behaviour. It might. You mentioned wastefulness, Paddy. It might be considered antisocial to do various other things that nowadays are sort of, you know, taken for granted. Accumulating goods that you never use or rarely use. So it really is problematic to know, to sort of categorise antisocial behaviour in the same way as capitalist society does.
There may be some minor things arising purely out of the structure of socialist society itself. Because, for example, in every truly egalitarian society I know or I've read about, there is an attitude where you cannot tell anybody else what to do. You do. I mean, even children. I mean, in these societies, you know, it's like the idea of property doesn't exist, and it doesn't exist as far as children are concerned either. This mine and mine thing just doesn't actually exist. So, I mean, this seems to be a cultural thing. So, I don't think that's a problem. But the sort of sense of people claiming status over other people would just not be tolerated. This would be completely outrageous. So I think social society might generate attitudes of that kind, you cannot tell somebody else what to do. You cannot claim status over somebody else. And if you do, then you will get social disapproval. But I think for that kind of thing, social disapproval works extremely well. At least it does if you have some kind of stability among communities. You know, if everybody is constantly moving around the world, I mean, I don't actually see that happen, but then you might have a problem with that. But, you know, I certainly see, or I imagine, and I could be wrong, but I just imagine that although we would organize on a large scale, we would also organize on a small scale in terms of communities. Because I think it's just easier for us. I think it's actually more natural and more comfortable for human beings to live in, I think it was Raymond Williams who talked about known communities, communities where people know each other or can recognize each other where it is. So, I think socialism itself will actually start to generate attitudes which will then become, ethically kind of, have an ethical dimension to them. As I say, claiming superiority or anything like that.
Well, I've had some interesting ideas have come forward. it's quite obvious that we're quite correct to say we can't predict what things are going to be like in the future. This conversation today sort of shows that, doesn't it? We don't really even know the basics of how socialist society will be organized. Going back to Richard's point, we can't really even make an educated guess. So what we have to, I think, focus on, our immediate task, is how to answer people who ask these kinds of questions and give some kind of answer, even though it's qualified in all the ways that we've done. I've noticed that, you know, some women I've talked to in the past are unconvinced by socialism because they don't see an obvious way that things like domestic violence would be reduced or rape. They don't see it's not obvious by the nature of socialism that those things would disappear. So, you know, these kinds of questions really, really speak to the urgency of having some kind of working model, I think, so that we can answer these things.
At the risk of boring everyone with hunter-gatherers again, the way that many hunter-gatherer communities deal with the fact that men are, as a matter of fact, stronger than women and are more likely to commit antisocial acts, women generally, or one very common strategy, is for the women to form coalitions within their communities. And if any man starts treating, there's no marriage, of course, there's no marriage. So, a relationship exists as long as both partners want it to exist. And in fact, if one partner decides that they no longer want the relationship to continue, they walk out. They don't even have to give an explanation. They just go away. And the other partner has no even right to ask her why, or him why, happens both ways. And the children then just sort of decide who they want to live with. It's the children's decision. They don't even have to live with their families. They can live with anyone in their community that they like or want to. Again, I'm not saying it would be like that in socialism, although I would imagine that marriage would disappear. So I think that the ties that by the economic ties that bind in a marriage situation would be absent, and that individuals would be free to move away. And I think one of the great strengths of hunter-gatherer societies is that if a conflict arises, one of the ways it can be settled, and 9 times out of 10 it is settled, if it's intractable, is that one person gets up and goes and lives with another community. It's just as simple as that. They just get up and walk out. You know, that there will be no property issues for a woman whose partner is behaving in a negative way, because she can just get up and walk out. She can go anywhere. You know, there's not all this sort of problem of where am I going to live? Who am I going to live with? What I'm going to lose my income if I'm earning locally. None of that will apply. So in terms of the sexual, antisocial behaviors, I think there is a lot that we can say about socialism that would actually reduce that. Wouldn't actually make it go away entirely, because as I say, even in hunter-gatherer societies, which are egalitarian, women are sometimes abused by men. But basically, as I say, if it's sort of in the communities where women form these coalitions, if they get a whiff of any man, behaving badly towards a woman, they go and beat the shit out of him. I mean, literally, if you've seen 6 of these women with big sticks beating the shit, I've seen films of this, beating the shit out of a man who's being abused in his partner or another woman. It doesn't happen for very long. They soon stop doing it.
Well said, Richard. I agree with such a lot of what you said there. And I think the restrictions within capitalism causes all of us so many problems. We all know that. And this is one of them, which is just makes the imbalance pretty awful. But I think you got it in a nutshell. Well done. Thank you.
Yes, I agree with that as well. I think we've just gone past 4 o'clock, so I mean, that might be a good place to wrap it up.